Joel Goldsmith, the tenet of his teaching was to give up the belief in two powers, good and bad. Means whatever happens in life, event or a person in our life, to give up the belief that this is good and that is bad. Because when we give up the belief in two powers, we accept that all there is God, whether we like it or not. Even the person standing in front of us, whom we have a confrontation with, is an aspect of God. Because there can be nothing which is not God. But because we are embroiled in dualistic thinking, with a split mind, which has cut everything into what is for me and what is against me, what is in my favor, what is not in my favor. Because that has happened, we are pitching events and people against us. So if we accept that there is only one power and no power apart from God, we find our relationship with the event or the person we have an issue with is now being addressed without this split. And so the way we present ourselves to the situation or the person changes. We may still not like what is in front of us. We don't have to embrace it saying, oh, you too are an aspect of God. But we have to realize that all there is consciousness. Can you imagine someone in your life, anyone, worker, co-worker, family member, spouse, friend, just as a small experiment, someone who you've been meeting often enough, just for 5 minutes, the next time you meet the person, be a blank slate and listen to and absorb the person 100% without the mind interpreting what the person is saying. Listen totally, see the person totally. You will find that more than likely the person becomes uncomfortable because perhaps you have not listened totally and looked at them totally earlier, or they have not had anyone look at and listen to them totally. But when you look at and listen to someone totally, deep down, they know they are being honored. They may not be aware of it consciously. They know they are being honored. Their presence is being honored for who they are. That is why so often I would hear people who came from all over the world to Rameshji's house. What they would say, they felt he accepted them totally. Now, what does that mean? He certainly didn't go into the history of everyone in detail to understand where they were in life, etc., etc., etc. Few questions he would ask. But because they felt that they were accepted for who they were, that here was this man in a white kurta pajama, if they had to say something, he was so attentive, so non-judgmental, so open to the other person, which God has placed before him. I have faced it a few times socially. Sometimes I am so engrossed in what the person is saying that the person becomes very uncomfortable. Why are you staring at me like that? And actually the opposite has happened. But the ego is so resistant to another person that it assumes the other person is doing something to me. In which case, here it means you are staring at me. How dare you? I have seen that also. Because we live in opposition. And added to that, if one is quiet, it's even worse. Because then they don't know what's going on in your mind. They assume the mind is going round and round because their mind is going round and round. So it's assumed. What is this person thinking about me? What's going on in his mind? That is how the ego is programmed to function. And so I do feel it's a great practice. Take that one person in your life the antagonist, could be a parent, could be anyone, lover, child, and just say to yourself when that person is front of you, I accept you 100% the way you are, because that is the way God created you. I have no business telling God how His creation should be, because if I did, then I assume I know better than God. And God doesn't need you to tell people how they should be. That is arrogance. With this understanding, all arguments drop. Even if they start in the heat of the moment, they end pretty soon. But if you find, if you are in a shop arguing with a shopkeeper about something, on and on, or you find you are arguing with a particular friend about an opinion about something, if you find you keep having to either defend yourself or impose your view on the other, it is a clear sign that the ego has not absorbed the teaching of thy will be done and nobody is the doer of their actions. But if you find that arguments still happen because in the heat of the moment something is said or heard, but pretty soon it loses its energy, it loses its charge, then you realize you are out of the game. You are no longer trying desperately to convince someone about your point of view and whether their point of view is right or wrong. You say it once and you're done with it. It happened to me with the Sufi mystic who I said is 95 years old. When I met him 10 years ago, I must have asked him something like, show me God, or, you know, take me up there with you or something. And this time, when I visited him, again his chela said, is there something specific you wanted to ask him? So I said the usual, I said, you know, material things come and go, life is this way, sometimes that way, that's all irrelevant because it's transient. So I just want his blessings and maybe to take me where he is. So this man translated, the chela translated to him. And you know what he replied? He said, you've already told me that 10 years ago. Why are you repeating yourself? This is someone who meets thousands of people, thousands upon thousands. So here's another very good practice. Find out for yourself how much you are repeating yourself and with whom. Because that will expose your issue, not theirs. What are you going on and on about? And then you find you start leaving people alone, letting them be, because that repetition was in your head. Lesser the repetition, the closer one is to the death of the thinking mind. Otherwise, we are going to repeat ourselves till we die. Would anyone like to share something or ask something? What had you mentioned that day about the Buddha, about that girl walking past the Buddha or something? What was that incident?
I had read a story about Buddha being in the forest meditating. In the same forest, some group of men bring a prostitute. They all disrobe her and start misbehaving with her. She gets afraid and starts running. And she passes by Buddha, in front of Buddha, and Buddha is with open eyes. After a while, they come and the men come and ask Buddha, did you see a woman go by? And Buddha says, someone did pass by. They say it was a woman, and I didn't notice. Then they laugh and said, she was fully naked. I could hear you, I have not noticed. He said, I don't see a woman from a man. It was someone passed by. So that story, it made a deep impact on me when I read that. That even seeing a man from a woman, is something which Buddha doesn't do, that we do all the time.
Yeah, that is a beautiful incident, which is pointing to seeing a person first, a being. Do you know that the archangels, the seven archangels, don't have a gender because they are prior to that split? After all, even that is a split in duality. Even Nisargadatta Maharaj would say the same thing. Where is the question of male or female if you are not the body? He said, my whole teaching is that you are not the body but the consciousness. So where is the question of gender? Gender is of the body.
You know, whatever I hear resonates very deeply inside me. But when I go back to my environment with all its triggers and provocations, all what I have understood here, it just vanishes in face of that provocation. And then I feel very angry with myself that, you know, you knew better, you understood better, but look at what you are, how you are reacting, you know. So I'm always in this pull-push, you know. I'm seeking to understand myself better, life better, but my reactions are my old conditioning still. And then I feel this upsetness towards myself.
And what you have explained is what everyone goes through by and large. They have understood it, they've accepted it makes total sense, but they can't help being themselves, which is so beautiful because it shows you have no control over it.
So then what should we do?
Absolutely nothing. That is why I mentioned to you once in Bombay, there's nothing more to do now. It's not the easy way out, because what it is creating space for is for the teaching to do its job, the understanding to do its job. Because if you keep feeling that you are in control of ensuring you don't react and all that, you're still the doer. I can control that I won't react, but you are not able to control. So clearly you're not the doer, right? So that's it. Now I'm done.
So in the face of that provocation, you just have to...
You have to do nothing.
Not
allow the teaching to do it. Let the understanding come on its own.
And the teaching will do its job only if you...
step out of the way to try and do the teaching's job.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
We are all guilty of this. We try to do the job of God because the ego loves doing. I must improve myself. I should be more aware so I don't react like I used to react. Oh damn, here I go again. I reacted the same way. It's all control, 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 control. The ego is trying to control everything. The ego is first trying to control the other person. Then it's trying to control itself and its reactions. It's all about control. And this is an invitation to give up that control. There is nothing you can do as such to get peace of mind, because that doer is the troublemaker. How many times are you going to attempt to try and control your reaction? But by and by, what happens is you see, okay, there I go again. Okay, there I go again. With no role to play, what happens is witnessing starts happening more and more. That starts happening. Because now you're not condemning yourself also. Why did I do this? Why did I react again? All that why is gone. God's will. So slowly what happens is this quality of witnessing starts seeping in on its own. Because that control is being given up. But the ego is very scared to give up control. But isn't it time? When one has suffered enough, this is the greatest opportunity. It is control.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So, like when I heard from you that we wear a mask, with every person, different mask, and I've been seeing this in myself, that with every person I talk differently, I behave differently. If there is a child in front of me, I behave differently. If there is an elderly person, my tone, everything changes. With him, my tone changes. With a friend, my tone changes. And so I was just observing all these years that there is a mask all the time. So I, something like it hurts that I don't know what is my true personality. And I see that the way I behave with this person is because of this, how my parents behave, the conditioning. I connect the dots, but there is this question that what am I as a person without these masks? I don't know. The only time I feel the most comfortable is to look into your eyes when I'm not talking. That's when I feel it's I'm without a mask.
See, the personality is the person. The masks, we all wear masks. Even she would wear a mask in that sense. I would wear a mask. If I'm talking to my staff member, I'm not going to be the same person as I'm talking to a child, if that's what you mean by mask, because the role is different, right? So if that is what you mean by mask, that's not the mask I'm referring to. The mask I'm referring to is the social mask where we hide our true selves in order to be approved and liked and accepted by others. So we find that socially, you know, we play the nice person and we make ourselves likable and lovable, and we have these interactions at a very superficial level if, let's say, we are at a party. The mask of personality is what is covering our true selves, not covering our true personality, because then there'll be two personalities. We are in the realm of personality. This is going to keep changing based on interactions. The one behind the mask is true being, human being, pure being, not one personality and another person behind the personality and all that. Who is the one behind the person? The person is the person based on the person's genetics and conditioning, and will operate in society at different levels in different ways. I am not going to treat someone working in my house as a long lost friend, because the dynamic is different, you see. But I will never mistreat them, because the understanding is there that they are an aspect, an instrument of God. But certainly the role changes. You are not going to treat the parent the same way as you treat the child. Doesn't mean we are wearing masks in that sense. We are operating in the realm of personality. When the personality is not operating, one is established in being. That is what happens by and by when we are in the company of truth. It could be a person speaking, a teacher talking. It could be a teaching without a teacher. It could be a book one is reading. Then that personality, so to speak, is kept aside, because there's nobody to impress. My equation with my teacher was 90% silence. Not much to talk about in that sense. Besides when we were working together on editing his books and publishing them.